It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is a Wednesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Great to be with you. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Just getting you up to speed on the schedule here for the week. My apologies for no follow-up post-game Detroit podcast. It was just, honestly, it was just too much work. I'm just going to be flat out. You guys know that I do the pregame and the post-game show. So I was up till 1:30 in the morning doing the post-game. Quick turnaround to do a 6 a.m. radio show, column to write for the Houston Press. My opinions on that game were easily found on the post-game show as well as Payne and Pendergast if you needed them badly enough. So my apologies if you rely on the podcast for those thoughts. It's one of those things with these primetime turnaround games. The post-game episodes of the podcast are tricky to get out in time to where they're not already obsolete, you know. So we got one more primetime game with the Cowboys coming up on Monday. Everything's pushed back a day this week for the Texans, so I've done the same thing with the podcast. The mailbag normally would be on Tuesday. It's on Wednesday this week just because I wanted to hear from D'Amico Ryans yesterday before we started digging into mailbag questions and talking about the Texans because we would be a little bit more informed. So that's the schedule. I don't know if there will be a follow-up episode to the Cowboys game on Monday, but once we're back on the normal noon Sunday games, we'll be back on the 3-episode-a-week thing. So there'll be a mailbag this week. There'll be a Cowboys preview this week for sure. And then back on the normal schedule of mailbags and so forth next week. And we're getting down to it, man. There's only 7 games left to go in the season. Texans are 6-4 right now. They were 6-4 this time last year. And I feel like the feelings were very different a year ago than they are right now for a 6-4 football team. And I think there's a few reasons for that. We're going to get into the mailbag here in just a second, but just a few things out front. I do want to talk about that, like where this team is at right now, because there are certain things about this team that are very exciting. I think the defense is very exciting. The fact that we'd seen what they'd done to Josh Allen and forcing him into all those incompletions. We'd seen them do it against other quarterbacks, you know, good performances. I mean, they forced Anthony Richardson into a super low completion percentage, but other teams have done that too. Them doing what they did to the Lions, and I know the Lions wound up scoring 26 points in that game. I understand that. That was still below their season average. And Jared Goff, despite not getting sacked in that game, I thought the Texans did a really good job of flustering him throughout the game. He went 15 for 30 in that game, and I think a lot of that had to do with the constant pressure the Texans were putting on him. Even though they didn't get him on the ground, I thought they forced him into what was easily his worst game of the last couple of months. He's been one of the hottest quarterbacks in football during this 6-game winning streak. Some of the numbers he's been putting up are amazing, and his numbers on Sunday were not. He was 15 of 30. Obviously, he threw 5 interceptions in that game, really 4. The Hail Mary at the end of the half, that's not one that was a mistake necessarily. The other 4 were, and there were some of them were forced errors, really, I thought, by the Texans. So the defense, very exciting right now. Now, they need to be at full speed. They did what they did on Sunday without Will Anderson. That should be pointed out. And the Kamari Lassiter concussion is something that we'll be keeping an eye on during the week this week, because that's concerning. Kamari Lassiter, having Stingley and Lassiter both out there together is what unlocks a lot of what they were doing the first 3 quarters of that game against Detroit with some of the blitzes they were doing and so forth. So that'll be an injury to watch this week. But I'm very excited about the defensive side of the football. The defensive side of the football for this team looks like a D'Amico Ryans product, which is what makes the offensive side of the football such a confounding, confusing, infuriating clusterfuck of a mystery. How D'Amico Ryans, the swarmiest of swarmers and the leader of the swarm movement, whose defense looks every bit the swarm movement, how he can tolerate, I don't know what the verb is to use, because I don't know if he's tolerating it. I don't know how angry he is about it. I don't know how much he is, but I'm talking about the offensive line, like how he allows that offensive line to exist in the swarm ecosystem without wanting to strangle somebody is beyond me. And maybe he does want to strangle somebody. I have no idea. But the offensive line, Bobby Slowick, look, in this game, the Detroit game, C.J. Stroud, there's plenty of blame to go around for why this team has been so inept, particularly in the second half of football games offensively. They've now gone a month without scoring a second half touchdown. And there was no bye week plunked down in there either. You know, sometimes you make a month. Oh, we only played three games. We had a bye week. No, you played four games and no touchdowns in the second half. And I don't care who the opponent is. You know, Detroit's a really good defense. But you played the Packers, the Colts, the Jets, and the Lions on Sunday. Those are the four teams you can't score in the second half. I don't care that Nico Collins isn't out there. I don't care that I don't need any excuses. There are shitty teams that manage to score a touchdown in the second half of football games over the course of a month. So this is a true crisis. I've been calling it that for a couple of weeks now, because the fact of the matter is, even before this four-game stretch of futility in the second half of games, they'd only scored six touchdowns in the second half of the first six games. Like it's, so it's not like they'd been explosive offensively in the second half of football games. But it's a five-alarm fire now, and I don't know that it's Nico Collins coming back. I'm guessing they'll maybe score a second half touchdown against the dog ass shitty Cowboys on Monday. But that one player seemingly means so much to what you do offensively is a little disturbing. I know you lost Stephon Diggs for the season to an ACL, but that's just, again, I'm talking about performing at a level above futility. I'm not saying I'm angry because they're not the vintage Kansas City Chiefs or the Baltimore Ravens, or even the team they just played, the Detroit Lions, who put up 19 in the second half, as we know, against the Texans. I'm saying get out of first fucking gear is what I'm saying. So I was exceptionally angry after the game on Sunday against the Lions, really agitated after the game on Sunday, probably about as angry as I've been, because we keep getting told how fixable it is, and there's been so little change. The only change that's been made was thrust upon them because Kenyon Green got hurt. I don't think it's unfair to assume that if Kenyon Green hadn't gotten hurt, he'd still be the starting left guard. So I know D'Amico, he coaches and exists in a world of positivity. I think that's awesome. And I think that's a lot of reasons why guys want to play for D'Amico Ryans. And I think it's great. And I don't encourage him to stray away from that. For him to do that would be phony. So I'm fine with him. But I wonder how much the positivity can bleed into delusion. And I'm probably robbing from the mailbag here by talking about some of this stuff, because you guys probably have questions about some of this stuff and how I feel about it. But I feel so strongly about it, I wanted to get out there at the beginning of the podcast, is that when the positivity leads to things like sticking with Damian Pierce too long last year, you needed an injury for him to get out of the lineup. When the positivity for Kenyon Green turns into leaving Kenyon Green in and getting C.J. Stroud killed, that's a problem. And now you have to ask, is the positivity and hope and delusion possibly that Bobby Slowick can turn this offense around, is that turning into a problem for the team? So I'm not out on Bobby Slowick yet. I know some are. But they got to figure some things out here, and they got to figure them out quick. They get three good games to at least get their confidence going again. Assuming they get Nico Collins back, you're going against three teams that are just flailing right now. You know, they, like, the Cowboys are a hot mess. The Tennessee Titans have Will Levis as their quarterback. But it's a division game, you know, so there'll always be that juice. And then you play the Jags in Jacksonville. And I'm guessing even as shitty as their season has been, they're going to want to snap the winning streak you have against them in Jacksonville. Even the bad Texan teams over the last few years were winning games in Jacksonville. Last time the Texans lost in Jacksonville was 2017, the year the Jags made it to the AFC title game. So I'm still really concerned about this offense. I'm concerned about C.J. Stroud. I thought the two interceptions were entirely his fault. So did he. So I'm not saying anything out of line. But it's just very the team is 6-4 and they're leading the division by two games, whereas last year they were 6-4 trailing in the division by a game.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
And I feel like last year the vibe was just so much more positive around this team. I think expectations do that. I think expectations, I think concern over the regression of C.J. Stroud. I think the fact that last year's offensive line, while it wasn't great, it was the first year of the system. They were ravaged by injuries. They were kind of an underdog. It was an easier offensive line to root for last year because they had some journeyman guys on there, and even the guys who were the stars like Laremy Tunsil's playing through a knee. This is not a likable offensive line this year. Titus Howard stops blocking during plays. Laremy Tunsil is setting a record for penalties for an offensive lineman. Shaq Mason is fat right now and not good at football. And then you got the young guys in the interior who they're just, I can't get mad at Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson. Other than for Scruggs, it's just here we are in his second season, and I don't know that he's pushing the potential of what a second round pick should look like. So I think there's a lot of things that go into the vibe being very different right now at 6-4. Ironically, firmly in first place, as opposed to last year at 6-4, where I believe they were on the outside looking in for even a playoff spot at this point. The Jags were leading the division. So I'm not judging any of the fans who feel negatively about it. This stretch of losing three out of four games has been coming for even when they started 5-1, this was coming because they let teams hang around too much. So I think it's important to still be critical while the team is in first place. And obviously there's plenty to be critical of, but there is plenty to be excited about too. So let's get to the mailbag so we can talk about both of those things. But those are my thoughts off the top. By the way, real quick, HOUmailbag@gmail.com is the email address. Those of you that are regulars know that already, but if you haven't already, put it in your contacts. Tell a friend about the podcast too, so we can keep growing this thing and keep doing this thing. But quick update to the Nico Collins. I know some of you are going to ask about that. We got a few mailbag questions about Nico, so I'll just sum this up here and not address them in the mailbag. I am very optimistic that he'll play this weekend against the Cowboys. The full week of practice is the tell. D'Amico wasn't even coy about it really yesterday, like he tends to be sometimes about injuries. He said Nico's going to practice this week. Now we'll see if it's full go. Or if it's limited, if it's full go, then he's playing. If it's limited, then that leaves open the possibility of him being listed as questionable and another game time decision. And, who knows what they do. It would be nice for Nico to get back on the field, get his timing down with C.J. Stroud once again. I don't think this team is in a position to really fuck around anymore if they want to have the season that they'd hope to have. The fact of the matter is, if they wanted to, they probably can fuck around and just win the AFC South because the division is so shitty. If they win against Tennessee, and Jacksonville, they win those three games, which are the two worst teams in the worst division in football. If they win those three games, they're 9-8. The Colts would have to go 6-1 down the stretch to win the division. Have you watched the Colts lately? That ain't happening. So the Texans, for all intents and purposes, have clinched. They might be able to clinch the division with Davis Mills as their quarterback, honestly, is where they're at right now. So they're in a great spot to make the postseason. They're not in a great spot to be anything other than what the Texans are every year they've made the postseason, which is the champion of a mediocre AFC South with the potential to win a playoff game and then get their heads handed to them on the road. Like that's, And I think that's where the angst comes in. All right, I've been talking for 13 minutes now without answering a mailbag question. So let's start digging in here on the mailbag. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Darren says, first half, we run more of a spread offense. O-line was more consistent in pass pro. We were having success. Second half, Bobby Slowick goes back to what I call the rugby-style offense. We went away from it. The offense appears to have lost confidence in the scheme. I think Slowick is in over his head. Who could the Texans promote to bring in for play calling duties? I'd like to see Gerard Johnson have a shot at play calling. If they change during the season, the only one that's reasonable to think, I don't think there's one. There may be a few. If they were to demote or remove Slowick, and let me be very clear about this, because I got a ton of Bobby Slowick emails. I know this for a fact. If I search on Slowick's name right now on my document for the mailbag, he'll come up quite a bit. They're not firing Bobby Slowick in season, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think the head coach who needed the jaws of life to pry Damian Pierce and Kenyon Green out of the lineup the last 2 years is firing his buddy who's the offensive coordinator, when there are plenty of other fingers, plenty of other people to point the finger at, including Slowick, but others as well. There's a better chance that they do something with that offensive line position group, I think. It's easier, I think, to fire a position coach than it is a coordinator. But let's pretend for a second that they do fire Bobby Slowick or demote him, give play calling to somebody else. Gerard Johnson, I would make Gerard Johnson the favorite only because he's the quarterback's coach. He's got a comfort level with CJ. He's probably the one that works closest in putting the game plan together. Bill Lazor, who's sort of an offensive assistant, consultant, veteran guy, veteran coach, is a possibility. And Ben McDaniels, the wide receivers coach, did take turns calling plays during training camp. So maybe he's being groomed for that next spot. My guess is at training camp, that was probably a priority, was to get other guys calling plays so that when Bobby Slowick left for his inevitable head coaching job, they'd have an OC in waiting. I don't know that head coaching job is coming for Bobby right now. So that's my thought on that, Darren. Ben in the South, who's the foil to France in the North, Ben in the South says, do you think Slowick knows he can make halftime adjustments? Better yet, do you think he knows the other team actually is making halftime adjustments? 4 consecutive weeks with no second half TDs. That is pathetic. Some of these emails I read, obviously Bobby knows he can make halftime adjustments. Obviously he knows the other team can. So I can answer those questions. Some of these I read the same way Jim Rome reads emails, like just because they're funny. That's a funny email by Ben in the South. I will say this about the adjustments, because Bobby addressed it and Bobby kind of downplayed it in his press conference last week. Slowick's press conferences have become must watch now just because he's under such heat. And this past week is not going to do anything to make Friday's media for Bobby. Bobby meets with the media on Friday this week. Everything's pushed a day back. Not going to make it any easier. The one point that I've heard made that is valid is that halftime adjustments maybe a little too much gets made of the whole halftime element to it. It is an easy thing to talk about because it's a very distinct point on the chronology of a football game. Teams leave the field, have time to go plan things, and then come back out. The fact of the matter is they don't have a ton of time in the locker room at halftime to do much of anything. It's a 12-minute halftime. By the time everybody's in there and situated, this is just what players have told me, people take a leak, whatever it is they need to do. There's not a ton of time to make adjustments and get back out on the field and warm up and get stretched out for the second half. There's not a lot of time. The point I was going to make, or the point I've heard made that I like, is that, hey, there's adjustments made throughout the game too. Like halftime is just one point in time during an NFL game, but there's easily just as many important adjustments made midway through the first quarter, 4 minutes into the second half, whatever that may be. So Bobby knows he can make halftime adjustments. I'm pretty sure. Fairly certain. Spike in Melbourne, Australia representing. Love the global flavor of the podcast. I know last week against the Lions sucked for a number of reasons. One positive I took out of it, it seemed like CJ Stroud had decent protection and as such was able to convert some of those third and longs. And then he says, in the first half, right? I feel like in previous weeks, you never would have had a shot. How did you feel about the new-look offensive line as pass blockers? I know the run blocking was atrocious. Yeah, let's put the run blocking aside. I thought they I, I thought for the most part they looked good. They still gave up four sacks. Like, that's still not acceptable. But again, we're just talking about improvement over what had been the worst offensive line pass protection I'd seen in the history of me watching this team. Not an exaggeration, by the way. Not that pass pro that we watched in week 7, 8, 9 is worse than anything I've ever seen in covering the Houston Texans. And that includes the year where Deshaun Watson had to take a bus to go to Jacksonville because he had a collapsed lung or whatever it was, because he got hit so much. And your left tackle was Julian Davenport. Remember that in 2018? That was fun. The COVID year where they were 4-12, the David Culley year, the Lovie Smith year. Pick any shitty year during the Bill O'Brien era where they had bad offensive line play. That was the worst three-game stretch I've ever seen for the Texans in pass protection. Maybe any team that I've watched, period. So yeah, they were better than that. They were bad. And CJ did have more time, and he did convert some third and longs in the first half. It's still not a good pass protecting offensive line, but it was better than the shittiest version that we saw the last 3 weeks. I think they're going to stick with this. It'll be Patterson at center and Juice Scruggs at left guard, and we'll see from there. But Titus and Laramie need to pull their head out. I know their PFF grades are really good, and that's cool, and I love PFF, Pro Football Focus. I like my eyes better than Pro Football Focus, and my eyes tell me that Titus Howard stops in the middle of plays. I don't know how that registers on PFF. Apparently, you don't get penalized too much for it because his grade is pretty good. You should get minus 30 points off your grade if you try to strip your own quarterback of the ball. That's my feeling on that. For those wondering, that's my feeling on that. That was the dumbest play I've ever seen in my life. All right, let's keep moving. Hopefully, we get to some things that put me in a better mood in the mailbag here. Chris in the ATL. I flew into Houston today and way too many Detroit fans at the airport. So Chris sent this email on Sunday. Probably before the game. Let's keep reading. Focusing on, and I read all these before I put them in the mailbag, but I do it like on Monday and then I forget. Focusing on a positive from the game. Okay, so this is after the game. Mechie had a breakout game on primetime, and I'm hoping it's a sign of more things to come. All right, I'll stop right there. Agreed. John Mechie was awesome in that game. John Mechie was open, and John Mechie was open a lot more than his targets would indicate. He was open a few other times and CJ missed him or didn't see him. So I was encouraged by the off-the-ball stuff with Mechie as much as I was the 5 catches for 74 yards and a touchdown that he had. Those were super encouraging, especially the touchdown going up in between a couple guys, getting hit, coming down with it. Like, these are the things that Mechie was drafted for. He's a tough kid. He can get open. He's not super explosive, but he's cagey. He's a willing blocker, all those things. We saw on Sunday, and we had him on the post-game show, and he's just such a great dude. So I'm rooting for John Mechie, and they need a third option to emerge. I was hoping it'd be Robert Woods, could kind of be a poor man's Diggs. You know, Stephon was getting used more than anything else to move the chains. He wasn't getting targeted downfield a ton. I thought Robert Woods could be a chain mover. Robert Woods let a ball bounce off his chest in this game, so I don't know what to think. I think Mechie's the best chance for a guy to emerge as option number three. So yes, that's very good. Let me write that down. Option three as a topic for Payne and Pendergast. And then Chris says, fun exercise, remove the biggest win for the Texans this year. That would be the Patriots, and the biggest loss. That would be the Vikings. That leaves a 5-3 record where the average point difference for wins is 3.6 points. The average for losses is 4.3 points. Can't say it's been a boring season. Now I know why I have high blood pressure. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chris. That wasn't a question with Chris in the ATL. That was just Chris dragging us down into a hole of stress. All right, let's keep it moving. France in the North. Says CJ took a lot of the blame on himself after the Sunday collapse. Do you think he truly believes that, or is he trying to take the heat off of others? I think it can be both. I think it can definitely be both. I don't think that's a real either or. I don't think CJ is a dishonest person. So I think the answers you get from CJ Stroud in a press conference are real. CJ will err to the side of just not talking about something versus lying about something. And I'm not saying lying in a way when I'm talking about these press conferences, because D'Amico lies in press conferences. He's lying when he says that Titus Howard wasn't trying to take the ball from CJ Stroud. But the lying that the head coach does or anybody does in a press conference, like, see, D'Amico lies to keep things behind the scenes that should stay behind the scenes or to protect players, which I don't have a problem with. I'm not a pastor that's pulling out the Bible and pulling up verses about how lying is going to send you to hell or anything. Like, no, this is like football lying. Now, CJ, like CJ, I think he's super, super honest in those press conferences. So, yes, I think he's blaming himself. He's also not stupid. Like, those interceptions were his fault. Like, he made horrible plays. He made horrible throws. He didn't make bad decisions necessarily. The first one he did, like, that was a bad decision, obviously, to throw that ball the first play of the first half. The second one, the interception throwing a tank, was a great decision. He just threw it way too late with way too much air underneath it. So he needs to make a better throw. I think I think there's also an element of CJ that is taking the heat off of others. You know, I think he views that as part of being a captain, which is, you know, he's the one that's going to take the bullets up there. So I think it's both fronts in the North, to answer your question. Fronts in the North also says, not sure if you ever look at the CFL, any predictions for the Grey Cup, Toronto Argos versus Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I have no prediction. I don't watch the CFL. The only time I've watched the CFL religiously in my life was when Rocket Ishmael was drafted by the Toronto Argonauts back in after the 1990 college football season. Because I was at Notre Dame at the time and Rocket almost won the Heisman Trophy. Instead, he signed a contract with the Toronto Argonauts where Bruce McNall, Shyster, was the owner of the team. I think John Candy was one of the owners of the team too. So I watched Rocket Ishmael in the CFL and then I used to watch the CFL a lot when ESPN first came on back in 1979, 1980, around then. And they didn't have the NFL. Like, ESPN was in its infancy. I was 11 years old, but I thought this is the most badass thing ever that we have a channel with all sports on it. Even if it wasn't a ton of sports I watched. I watched a shit ton of Australian rules football, Canadian Football League. I watched a lot back then. I probably would watch more if I gambled on it. Maybe I need to gamble on it. So no, I don't have a take on it, France in the North. But if you have a best bet, you've got my number. So text me and let me know if I should be betting on something. Just know that if I lose, it's big trouble. All right, let's keep it moving here. Carlos says, some people were worried we would get blown out. I felt with Nico back, we were going to pull it off. Driving 3 hours to pull in and get the no Nico alert sucks. So Carlos must be coming in from maybe Corpus or something like that, or San Antonio. But then we destroyed them in the first half. Then Fell was wide open in front of me. Dell was wide open in front of you, not Fell. Yeah, Dell. CJ failed us. Sad emoji. 30 points needed in this game. Lions could not run the ball after this, but alas, we fell into the Houston curse. We lost the second best record in the NFL last second. I think we now win 3 in a row. How about you? I think they do too. I think they do too. Carlos, I appreciate the email. And sorry your trip in was sorry the news, which I'm assuming you got from me or a push notification about Nico. It would have been from me on the post or the pregame show. It would have been on your phone on a push notification. Sorry you got that bad news. And hope you made it home safely. I do think they win 3 in a row. I think they're going to beat the Cowboys on Monday night. I think they need to fucking smoke the Cowboys on Monday night, though, to get people excited again. Like, maximum excited. I think there's still excitement, but trepidation. There's emotions all over the place with the Texans right now. There are angry people. There are cautious people. There are still people who are super optimistic. There's the end of every fan base spectrum that will either be super duper pissed or the one that, you know, D'Amico would have to go on a 4-state killing spree for you to even say something negative about him. So I think we're all over the map right now emotionally about this team. But I think they beat the Cowboys. I think they come back and beat the Titans at home on a short week. And then I think they go to Jacksonville and win. And I guess there's no real news yet on Trevor Lawrence. Their bye week is coming up the week before they play the Texans. So we'll know more. Whether Trevor Lawrence plays or not, I think the Texans win that game. But if Mac Jones plays, I think the Texans really win that game. Appreciate the email, Carlos. Let's see. BK, you got a long email here. making a Batman Dark Knight analogy, which I would love to read to the audience, but I'm trying to keep this podcast to 40 minutes. So I'll just focus on your question. I'll read the last part. Something ain't right, but I do believe getting our best offensive player, not named CJ, back and our best defensive player in Will Anderson Jr. to join Hunter and Autry is going to help. So maybe we can pull a Two-Face and go all crazy Harvey Dent in the second half of the season and finish some games. If we don't, here's my question. Do we need a new police commissioner? I mean, play caller. We can't continue to get shut out after the second half. I answered that already, but I do want to, you highlight something there that I think got strangely lost in the wash after the game, and I'm at fault for that. Like, I'm the first voice on the radio after the game, and maybe it's because I don't like to make excuses, but now that we're a couple days removed from the game, you are getting Nico Collins and Will Anderson Jr. back at some point here. They are your best offensive and defensive play. I know CJ is the quarterback. He's in a different category. I say that all the time. Some can argue for Joe Mixon, and I think that's great. But when this offense was playing its best, I'll say. When this offense is humming. This offense has not hummed all year. But when it's been at its best has been when Nico Collins has been out there. Like, Joe Mixon has been a very good running back. Nico Collins is in the conversation for best player at his position in football when he's been healthy this year. Will Anderson Jr. was literally the best defensive player in the AFC for the month of October. And five snaps after winning that award, he's got a twisted ankle because he got rolled up by Neville Hewitt. So, yeah, I'm really bummed we're really never going to get to see the whole offense we envisioned together. You know, all these guys they've got, plus Stephon Diggs, we never really got to see that. The only time we got to see it was in week one against the Colts, and it looked awesome in the first half of that game. Will Anderson Jr., Danielle Hunter, and Danico Autry all at full speed. Not Danico Autry shaking off rust, all at full speed, ready to go, is going to be very, very exciting. And the other pieces too on the defensive line, I think, are doing a really good job. I think this defense I'm excited about. The defense is something to start to look ahead towards January and go, okay, what is their capability? The problem for them is they're going to have to go, for the whole team, is they're probably going to have to go on the road fairly early in the playoffs. You know, they're not, I don't think they're getting two home games. But we'll see. But I think they do win the next three in a row. So there is that. Dave and Round Rock, have you ever read the book Peter Principle by Lawrence Peter about people getting promoted past their level of competency? He said, you're great at one job, get promoted, suck at the higher job, then just stay there and you bring the entire department down. I fear this may be where Bobby Slowick is. This is really interesting. He says the problem may now be a D'Amico Ryans or a Nick Caserio problem to fix this offense. I've never read the book, and maybe I should, Dave. I am a huge advocate of the concept of the Peter Principle. And I say this, I use that in an analogy. I use the Peter Principle quite a bit when it comes to evaluating, you know, organizations, teams, businesses I've been a part of before. I think there's something to it. I don't know that Slowick is a Peter Principle thing. Is he been promoted past his level of competency or to his level of incompetency? I'd like to think no. But you're right. It does. It's dragging D'Amico, whatever it is, whether he's Peter Principle or not, it is dragging D'Amico Ryans down. It is dragging D'Amico Ryans to a place where his operation is now getting scrutinized, where he's getting questions about, how does play calling go? Like, do you have input in that? Like, nobody gave a shit last year who had input into anything. Remember when the Texans were really shitty under David Culley? You guys remember that? And everybody wanted to know what the process was for how to do replay reviews or make decisions in game and using timeouts. Why? Because they sucked at it. And that's when we learned that, you know, Caserio's up in the box, may have a headset on, might be talking to Culley, this and that. In the NFL, during the season, coaches only get asked questions about how things operate if they are operating poorly. I know this. I have been, I brought this example up today on Payne and Pendergast. When D'Amico got asked, I think by Cody Stutes yesterday, about play calling and who's involved in it, are you involved in it, that kind of thing, when I saw that question in the press conference, I got a pit in my stomach because it reminded me of when I was running sales for the company I was with before I got into radio. I was a vice president of sales. I was like the head coach of sales, right? If we're going to use a football analogy. And I had several assistant coaches working underneath me. They were the area sales directors. I had seven regions that we divided the country up into, and these guys all reported to me, and they all had people that reported to them. Those are the players. The salespeople are the players. The area sales directors are like the position coaches and coordinators, and then I'm D'Amico Ryans, only not as good at my job, at that job, as D'Amico is as a head coach. But I remember, vividly, I was pretty good at my job, except you have a few, you have a couple regions that aren't hitting their number consistently over the course of a couple months, and it drags the numbers down. But more so, people want to know what's wrong. You know, in this case, the media, who's asking the questions of D'Amico Ryans on behalf of the fans, in this case, it would be, like my boss, who's asking on behalf of the shareholders, like, why is the Northeast region failing right now? How involved are you in their deals? Do you go on sales calls up there? Like, all these things that, because they need to know operationally what's not working. We got to fix it. And so that's what D'Amico's getting asked now. And that's why, and it's because of the offense. And it might be because of Bobby Slowick. I love the Peter principle, and I need to read the book. I love the concept of it. I think it's totally valid. I've told people this before, too, that I thought people bring up, I'll just use a radio example of it. When we had started 1560, when I was with John Granato and Chance McClain and everybody else, and ultimately 1560 was not successful. Otherwise, it would still exist. And I thought it probably existed longer than we maybe should have, just based on what we were generating numbers wise. But I thought a big reason why it failed was because everybody in the building was doing their job for the first time, from ownership on down. David Gao had never owned a radio station before. John Granato was our VP. He'd never been a VP before. Chance McClain had never been a program director before. I had never been a host before. John Harris had never been a host before. This isn't me pointing fingers at any one person or anybody at all. But it's just, you have that many people doing their job for the general manager of the station had never been a GM before. So you literally, there wasn't anywhere along the chain where there was somebody with experience. So maybe there's some of that going on too. I have no idea. Like, D'Amico's still a first time coach. Slowick's a first time coordinator. Gerard's a first, really a first time quarterbacks coach. I know these guys have all been in other positions in NFL buildings, but in their role for the first time. And CJ still being a young quarterback. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's something to that. But I just, like, that experience in my own life, as I go and look back at it, I'm like, okay, why did it fail? Because I thought we did really good content, and I thought there was a lot to like. People really liked the station. It had a shitty signal. That didn't help. And there were other things. But I think the big thing was, like, there was nobody who had, like, seen it before. Like, there's a lot of people doing their job for the first time. So maybe the Texans are an analogy of that. They're in an analogous situation to that. Man, I had fun at that station, though. We had a good time. good question, Dave. Didn't think I'd spend as much time on the Peter principle as I just did. And yet, here we are. Chuck in Denver, did the O-line shift from terrible pass protection to terrible run scheme? Are the roles really that different? I honestly don't know. I it's funny. I turned to Seth and I said that during the first quarter of the game when they couldn't run the football, but they were converting third and 16s. And I'm like, look, if we have to choose between one version of the Texans over the last couple of years and another version of the Texans over the last couple of years, then I'll choose the one where they can't run it, but CJ puts a cape on third and long, versus the one where Joe Mixon runs wild, but they just suck offensively. Chuck says he's sad about Sunday, but glad he has this group therapy session every week. Love you, man. Chuck in Denver. Chuck, I love you too, man. Appreciate that. Lot to like still about this team. All right, we got a few more here. Ooh, more than a few more. All right, let's keep it moving. Derwin and Cypress, did Brian Flores expose how to play against this scheme? The Niners, camouflaged by McCaffrey, being out, have more losses than the Texans. Is this a scheme problem and not a Bobby problem? What are the odds Kubiak could be brought in as an advisor? I don't think it's a scheme problem. The schemes always evolve. So I don't think it's a scheme issue. Now, I think it could be part of the portions of the scheme and the playbook that Bobby is deploying. You know, I still think that if the pass protection is more shored up now, then I think they need to lean on CJ's arm more than the running game. They need to stay out of third and long. Like, that's the big thing to me. Like, they're in third and long more than any other team in the league, and it's not even close. CJ is a quarterback. He's been in third and long 50 times this year, literally. The next closest is 37, Deshaun Watson. Wonder whatever happened to that kid. The odds that Kubiak could be brought in as an advisor, Derwin, I would say, like, under an official capacity, I would say very, very low. There's people out there saying get Kubiak as the OC. That's not happening. I think Kubiak's one of those guys who's always available to D'Amico for sure. And probably others on the staff via D'Amico. You know what I mean? Because this Texan staff, like that Kyle Shanahan staff in San Francisco, like they're all branches off the Kubiak tree. Like, I don't think Kubiak is like hitting ignore on any of their phone calls. So I don't think he ever comes in as an official advisor, but I think he's always there sort of unofficially. Dennis from Budapest. Dennis, it was good seeing you out at the pregame show, man. Really nice meeting you and meeting your family as well. Here's what Dennis says. It took me a day and a half to get to where I am today. I witnessed the perfectly 2024 Houston Texans midseason game, and I'm glad I did. It hurts, but I know there are better things ahead, and I also know someday I'll be back. Yeah, for those who don't know, Dennis came all the way over from Budapest, Hungary, to see the game. Stopped by the pregame show. Dennis, sorry I didn't get out to see you and drink at Lizards, but Dennis went to Lizards, the little dive bar right near where I live, so that was really cool. Dennis goes on to say, a couple years ago in the middle of the Easterby debacle, as Deshaun asked out, my fandom was genuinely tested. I felt like I had a way out, but I had to stay. Man, this is some heavy stuff, Dennis. This is like an abusive relationship. And you know what? That's what it was during the Easterby debacle, as you call it. Dennis goes on to say, so this week and this Sunday meant more to me than people might think. In the sea of Battle Red hospitality, he gives a shout out to Stephanie Stradley, who is the erstwhile concierge for tailgates here in Houston. If you're coming in from out of town, touch base with Stephanie Stradley. She'll get you fed. Said, I was finally baptized, and now I can truly say through thick and thin he's a Texans fan. Till we drink that beer, either in Europe or back in Houston, H is up. Dennis from Budapest. That's a great email. Dennis, it was awesome meeting you. If I make it to Europe, and my wife is begging me to go to Europe at some point, and Budapest is part of the tour, then we will drink that beer. If you're back in Houston, we're for sure drinking that beer. Okay. I will not let that slide this time. That was on me. You were at Lizards on Friday, and I was passed out by 10 o'clock on Friday. I had already been to Lizards that day and then went to Carrabba's for dinner, and I was bombed. So I went home and passed out. My sons and my wife went to Lizards, though. So you were probably drinking in the same vicinity as them. You're probably sitting right next to them there. Both my sons went with Amy. Awesome stepmom that she is. Went over to Lizards with them and then came back here. And then they're talking on the balcony of our building till like 2:30 in the morning. They were hardcore. I was an old man. I was passed out. The only reason I knew they were on the balcony at 2 in the morning is because I did the old guy thing. I got up to take a leak. Dennis says, P.S. Seth instantly asking me about 1989 events and the Berlin Wall was so awesome and on brand. He really does read his books. No, Seth is the most voracious reader that I know. And what Dennis is talking about, Dennis wanted to meet Seth so badly, and Seth was talking to other people. This is during a break in the pregame show. If you come by the pregame show, you know Seth and I will jump off the stage and come and chit-chat with you guys during the breaks. And that's what we were doing. Seth was chatting with somebody else. We had maybe a minute to get back on stage, and Seth comes walking by. I said, hey, Seth, you got to meet Dennis real quick. He came all the way from Hungary. And immediately, like, Seth wasn't doing the pregame anymore. I guess I went back up on stage. Apparently, Seth starts talking about the Berlin Wall with Dennis. I'm just finding this out now reading this PS. But that is on brand for Seth. Seth would have rather stayed there and talked about the Berlin Wall with Dennis than come back up on stage and talk about the Texans offensive line with me. And it's not because Seth is not hardworking and doesn't like doing his job. He is all those things. He is hardworking and loves doing the pregame show. It's because A, we're tired of talking about the Texans offensive line, and B, Seth is supremely interested in world events. That's all I got to say. All right, Joe Q is in. Joe Q, three quick takes for your reaction. One, Is the Juice Scruggs experiment at center over? Says pass pro got much better with Patterson. I think that job is his. Juice has not distinguished himself at guard. I don't think the experiment is over, and I will cite Kenyon Green continuing to play weeks and weeks and weeks after he should have been benched as an example. I'm not saying it should or shouldn't be over. I'm just saying Juice Scruggs is a second round pick, and they're invested in him. And I think they're probably, if he's not the guy, then they're probably going to ride him for about 3 or 4 weeks too long as not the guy. But I think the experiment at center may be over. But I don't think they're over Juice Scruggs yet. I think they're going to try to have Juice. I think they feel like Juice is one of their five best offensive linemen. Let's just put it that way. Take number two. If Kaimi had been a coin flip kicker from 50 plus all season, would we wake up today as a 3-7 team, man? And would we be asking a lot of questions about D'Amico and CJ that we don't ask because we sanctified them last year and Kaimi carried the team for 8 weeks? I don't know if we'd be waking up to a 3-7 team. It's tough to get into those conversations because the world changes when you remove a field goal from something. You know, like, it's just, we don't know how those games would have played out. And I think is it extreme to say that Kaimi Fairbairn won three games for them this year? Like, even the Buffalo game, like, if he misses that field goal, you go to overtime, you know, so maybe you still win that game. You know, like, if you miss, he kicked, you know, the first, I think six of his 50-plus yard field goals came in the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, they didn't need all those field goals to beat the Bears. Like, I think the Bears would have been sitting there trying to score until Tuesday in the second half of that game. I think it's fair to assume that if they're, you know, if Kaimi's a coin flip kicker, 3-7's extreme. Call it 5-5. I think the tone is still probably pretty similar to how it is now. Like, the record isn't what's bothering people as much as the fact that the offensive line is so inept at pass pro and CJ is getting so hammered. I think even if they won the game against Detroit, there would still be a lot of it out there about how the offensive line still isn't good, you know, even with Detroit that they would have beaten. So I don't know how much the tenor changes. And I think it's way more. I think it's way, it'd be way, way more on D'Amico than CJ. I think it is right now, too, even though CJ's not been as good as he was last year. This is still, I think, viewed by and large by people, the issue with the team, the offensive line, viewed way more as a coaching O-line problem than it is a CJ problem. Like, let me back up. Not even the O-line is an issue. The offense has an issue. The offense in the second half is an issue. I think it's viewed way more on the table of the coaches than it is CJ Stroud right now. Not saying CJ doesn't have some culpability, but that's just how I view it. Last one from Joe Q. If we look outside the AFC for some perspective, are we the Atlanta of the AFC? We have control over a very weak division with tiebreakers well in hand, but Atlanta is a sketchy pick against any of the eight teams in the NFC North or NFC West. This is the ugly mirror, but we need to look at it from time to time. That is a great question that I am going to bring up on Payne and Pendergast tomorrow, because I think that is exactly who they are right now. They are Atlanta. They are the Atlanta of the AFC. And how do you feel about Atlanta winning the NFC? Probably not great, right? Probably not great. Win a home playoff game, maybe. I'd pick CJ to win a home playoff game before I would pick Kirk Cousins to win a home playoff game. They just lost to New Orleans, which is worse than losing to the. That's worse than losing to the Jets. Both teams with interim head coaches, but the interim head coach for the Jets at least feels kind of coach-like. This character for the Saints stepping up to the mic and saying he clogged the toilet the first thing this morning. What are we doing? What are we doing? All right. Let's keep going here. Chris in Louisville, been watching, listening to the Utopia podcast for as long as I've known about it. Wanted to drop you a line, sending you this email on the Friday before the Lions game. And I think this weekend is really the fork in the road to, is this same old Texans with just new personnel, or do we have something special? Chris goes on to say a lot more things in here that are not applicable because the email was sent on Friday, but I kept this in here because I'm curious if this is how people feel. Like, is this same old Texans just with new coat of paint, as they say? New paint of coat, as my friend Bruce Pritchard likes to say. Because we know they're not something special right now. They lost the game. And I think even if they'd won that game, I don't know that I feel we have something special. I've never felt this is a special Texans team. I think they're really, really good at surviving some treacherous situations. Well, they were better early in the year than they are now at doing that. But I think they're more of a survival, swarmy team than they are a killer, an assassin. Is this the same old Texans with just new personnel? You know what? Until proven otherwise, that kind of is what they are right now. You know, they're a lock to win the AFC South, and they're probably nearly as big a lock to get their heads handed to them in round two of the playoffs if they get there. Chris, I appreciate you watching and listening to the Utopia Podcast. Appreciate that. My man Middle Screen is in. Says, here's my mailbag question. This is after a long preamble where he told me his wife was mad at him because he's paying more attention to this podcast and sending in mailbag questions into important things like packing for vacations and tending to the kids. Hey, man, priorities, all right, Mrs. Middle Screen? He says, if I'm honest with you, the Texans had a much better showing against the Packers and the Lions than I worried about. The Texans are still very early in the rebuild, and I think while they've been able to add some serious talent in a short period of time, the lack of organizational depth really shows. The Texans have added some great starting caliber players, but it takes time to fill out the back end. Do you think a part of the second half struggles is due to the lack of depth that comes with injuries, becomes apparent when the starters either get tired or leave early due to injuries? Why has Jimmy Ward injured like three Texan players in just over a year with the team? Yeah, that was unfortunate. Jimmy, friendly fire Ward, man. Yeah, he got Dalton Schultz in training camp last year. Isn't Jimmy the one that kind of got things started with Stephon during training camp? I think it is. And then the Kamari Lassiter one, man, that is the injury I'll have an eye on tomorrow on Thursday. But yeah, I think we're seeing that a little bit. Like at certain positions, like if you have D'Angelo Ross playing 100% of the snaps in a week 7 game, yeah, you got issues at cornerback, no question about it. I think D'Amico has been able to cover up some of those depth issues on the defensive side. Like he's a great linebackers coach. I think there's an element to him where he's a great defensive line coach as well, or at least he knows how to evaluate and put defensive linemen in position to be successful. So I think there's a reason why those position groups are able to shuffle guys in. Like you lose Will Anderson, but man, you still got D'Nico Autry and obviously Daniil Hunter, and you know, you bring in Dylan Horton, did some good things in that game on Sunday. Like he showed up a couple times. The offense, I don't know if it's a lack of depth at the offensive line. They're just not good from top to bottom. You know, wide receiver, is there a depth issue? Yeah, unless John Metchie develops. So yeah. Yeah, like this is not a completed roster, and it's not a completed rebuild. It's an accelerated rebuild. Like they've done an amazing job of putting this team in a I would say a relevant position in a very short period of time. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans have, and who knows if they had gone 9-8 and missed the playoffs last year, how people would be feeling right now. Ironically, I think part of what is fueling people's angst is the fact that they did make the playoffs and did win a playoff game. If they'd gone 9-8, if Tyler Goodson catches that ball on 4th-and-1 and the Texans miss the playoffs because they lose that Colts game, then the feelings might be very different. Like the expectations may have been tamped back a little bit, and people might actually be happy with 6-4. I don't think anybody's happy with C.J. Stroud getting as punished as he is, and that to me is the big thing. Like the record to me right now, as far as my emotional well-being, is irrelevant to the whatever effect C.J. Stroud is getting from all these hits. That's the most important thing, including the record in 2024 for this franchise right now, is C.J. Stroud. Last one, Edmund and Fulcher. In any case, he says, I want D'Amico to add two things to his game prep for the Cowboys. Delete the pages of the offensive playbook for screens and sweeps with Tank Dell. Said, I know Clint Sterner liked the addition of screens last week. They never seemed to work. Second, spent a lot of time on screen passes and outside sweep defense. Yeah, they had a couple glitches in the screen. Yeah, the one big Jahmyr Gibbs screen was unfortunate. Just a great story about how that was schemed up too, if you go find it, where Ben Johnson, the OC, Dan Skipper, their tackle in that game, got beat really badly on a play by Daniil Hunter. And apparently Ben Johnson told Skipper to get beat that badly again on the next play. And point being is it was a screen. And so Daniil Hunter thought he beat him again. And next thing you know, Jahmyr Gibbs is off to the races. Both of those areas were real weaknesses in the second half, Edmund and Fulshear says. So there you go, Edmund. Appreciate you listening as well. Also asked, did I try the cookie recipe? It's funny. I joke that you guys can email me anything about anything, including cookie recipes, and y'all still send me cookie recipes. I love that. I have not tried it yet, though, Edmund. I will let you know when I do. Football season's not the time for me to be baking cookies, man. It's just a busy time. All right. That's it. That's the mailbag for you. That was a long one today. We're coming up on damn near an hour. Let's get you guys squared away with a reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Tell a friend. I will have a preview of the Cowboys game coming up probably on Friday this week, heading into the weekend. And then we got the game on Monday night. So there'll be another episode. So if there's any more Texans news, we'll react to it on Friday this week. So until then, big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer, and big thanks to all of you for listening. This has been the Utopia Football Podcast. Have a great day.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.